Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Linnell Nussbaum. I represent Mr. Kaiser, the appellant in this case. I ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
I apologize if my voice is a little weak. I've got quite a cold. We're asking the Court to reverse Mr. Kaiser's conviction for second-degree assault with a firearm on the grounds that he received ineffective assistance of counsel when counsel withdrew from the jury instructions the defense of defensive property. Defense counsel's opening statement included theory of defensive property. He presented evidence defending property in cross-examination of the detective and cross-examination of Mr. Adams addressing the issues of trespass, and in the testimony of Mr. Kaiser that he intended to remove this process server from his property after he had completed serving process. Mr. Kaiser's memorandum also addressed the trespassing incident. Counsel proposed an instruction on lawful use of force, including both self-defense and defense of property. At the trial court's request and for the court's convenience, he also then prepared and presented an instruction excluding the paragraph identifying defense of property. Nonetheless, he still proposed other instructions on defense of property, specifically on the definitions of trespass and no right to remain. The state presented one instruction on that, and these instructions were given to the jury, instructions 12, 17, and 18. But when the court indicated it would give the defense instruction and add an instruction on malice, defense counsel suddenly proposed to remove the defense of property from the instructions.
Do you know why?
We do not know why, Your Honor.
The state argues, it seems, and it's one possible inference, that he would have, in arguing defense of property, have had to convince the jury that the process server, Mr. Adams, was acting in a malicious way, for which there was little or no evidence.
But, Your Honor, the cases of State v. Redwine and State v. Bland suggest that's not necessary and that would be an incorrect interpretation of the law if that were necessary. State v. Redwine specifically said it involved also a process server coming on property to serve process, and the defendant there ordered him to leave his property. And when he came and saw he had not left his property, the defendant went into his home, came out with a shotgun, and then there was a dispute as to whether he aimed the shotgun at the process server or not. But he had not left the property. It was not showing that he was doing anything but taking notes in his car. And the court there said that that failure to leave the property was sufficient to justify an instruction on defense of property. The state had raised that same issue there, that the issue that he was not entitled to an instruction on defense of property, and the Court of Appeals said that that was sufficient to do it.
Well, he may have been entitled to it, and, you know, your case, State versus Bland, lays that out. In that case, the instruction was kind of a mess, and this is not that kind of a case. This is a case where he withdrew defense of property because it seemed as though also that the testimony had all been in the vein of self-defense, or more particularly defense of others. It seemed as though Mr. Kaiser was particularly concerned about the welfare of his wife, who was standing there. He felt too close to Mr. Adams.
That was certainly part of the evidence, but the evidence also was that he wanted to remove this man from his property, and certainly he ordered him off his property. That was the gist of his communication.
Well, isn't it the law that he would have, in order to make that defense, I mean, there has to be, if the jury has to find that the alleged trespasser is acting with an evil intent?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that is the law, and that was...
So the proffered definitional instruction of malice, so it was ineffective assistance not to get rid of that, too.
It was ineffective assistance not to know that that was an improper instruction that was then being proposed and to object to that.
Perhaps do this? Let's say that you had been arguing or that counsel had been arguing effectively. What would that closing argument have sounded like if defense of property had been in there?
That closing argument would have sounded like this man was refusing to leave. He was standing too near, as Mr. Kaiser saw it, too near to his wife. wife imposed a threat. And he had a right to get this man off of his property. He, in fact, did refer to the right to protect his residence, but he had the right to get this man off of his property because once he had served his process, even if that allowed him to come on the property, it did not give him the right to remain on the property. And those were the instructions also given to the jury in instructions 16 and 17.
So, in other words, then the issue for the jury would have been whether he got off the property fast enough, given the conflicts. In the
That's process. Correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
Could I ask you one other question? One of your assignments of error is, did the to convict instruction deny appellant due process by not requiring the state to prove the assault was intentional? I don't think I understand that argument. I mean, was there not a separate instruction that had exactly the language about intentional?
No, Your Honor. There was an instruction defining the word intentional, but the to convict did not require that it be an intentional assault. The definition of assault included the specific intent of the intent to make someone afraid so that they would leave the property, which is completely consistent with self-defense or defense of property. That is what one intends, and I think the Bland case specifically uses language like that. That it can be reasonable to make someone afraid in order to get them to leave. But the general criminal intent is what was charged, and I think is what the law requires. This information said that he intentionally assaulted, and the general criminal intent requires an intent to reach a result that is a crime. And that precludes, that's the intent that is inconsistent with self-defense or defense of property with lawful use of force. The general intent, the general criminal intent was not included in the elements or in the instructions as having to be in the elements of
How
the offense.
How would that be phrased in the instruction?
I'm sorry?
What would the element that would be in the to convict instructions say?
The same as the information, that he intentionally assaulted. And then there is a definition of intent saying that that refers to the general criminal intent in reaching a result that is a crime. I'd also refer the court to supplemental statements of authority overturning where the Ninth Circuit overturned the state's reliance on Greer in Crace.
We're aware of that case. Thank you.
Crace for Herzog. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Kimberly Talene on behalf of Whatcom County for the State of Washington, and the state is requesting this court affirm Mr. Kaiser's conviction for assault in the second degree. Mr. Kaiser's attorney made reasonable, strategic, tactical decision to withdraw the defense of property instruction, and we would ask this court to not engage in hindsight.
Well, what do you think the motive was? I mean, why was that a reasonable tactical decision if it, you know, there was a lot of talk about trespassing?
There was a lot of talk about trespassing, but even as counsel answered your question, the primary focus of the case, as Mr. Kaiser's attorney stated to the court, was that he was defending his wife, that he was defending himself, defending his wife, and it was really a secondary issue with respect to property. There really wasn't a whole lot of evidence was presented that Mr. Adams had...
Well, okay. I mean, I wasn't trying to make your point for you. I mean, I realize that's part of your argument, but counsel's argument is that why not include it? And as I had understood your argument in your brief, it was because it would have involved getting into this definition of malice, but counsel now says, no, that's not required. Do you agree that that's the way to read Redwine, that it could, an argument could have been made that I was doing what I needed to do to get this person off my property, and that there would not have had to be a finding by the jury that Mr. Adams, the process server, was on the property maliciously.
He was maliciously trespassing or maliciously interfering with property. I mean, that is the defense. And
well, so would that definition have had to been given? Counsel says no under Redwine. What do you think?
No, that instruction would have to be given. State versus O'Hare, I think, in part, kind of answers that question. That's where there was only a partial part of the malicious definition was given to the jury, not the full definition. The court there, of course, precluded to review the issue because it was a definitional instruction that was being claimed and found that was not an issue of constitutional magnitude. But yes, all the parties below agreed, the court, defense counsel, and the prosecutor agreed that if they were going to do defense of property and the court said sure, the prosecutor said sure, then they would give the instruction. Otherwise, the term malicious would have no meaning in the defense. And it was not a word necessarily that the jury is not a word of common understanding. It's also, I think, defined by statute. And so, yes, the court would need to give that instruction, and the jury would have to take that into consideration as to Mr. Adams' actions. And I think that is what kind of infers, if you will, and confirms what Mr. Kreiser's attorney said. I think at one point at RP 1057, he said to the court, "This is certainly not going to be the central focus of our closing, Your Honor." So if the court just, and that's when he made the decision to withdraw the defense of property of others.
Let me also ask you about another issue in the case.
Yes.
That sign, this is my understanding of what happened, is that the police found a mock-up of a sign inside the shop and were allowed to bring it out into evidence and talk about what it said, armed response, this is a dangerous place, et cetera. And a timely objection was made that this was character evidence. And then the trial court let it in and then realized, I guess belatedly, that it was actually not on the outside of the shop, it was on the inside. And so then there was a motion for a mistrial. And so that's what I wish to focus on, because it's hard to see this as anything but character evidence. It seems to be something that portrayed Mr. Kreiser as a hothead.
Well, no, I disagree with that characterization. The state had a burden of proving that Mr. Kreiser pointed and shot his shotgun three times with the intent of creating the apprehension of harm as that's required by the Assault 2 statute.
Well, there's no question that he shot the gun. He admitted that.
So the only issue...
So what intent to do what?
The intent to create that fear.
What does the sign have to do with that?
Well, because it's relevant. It's relevant to looking at what his intent was, because this was a sign that he had mocked up in his office where the shotgun that he retrieved or the weapon that he retrieved was at, where he was at when Mr. Adams came onto the property. And so it really is an issue of relevance. And so did the trial court abuse...
How does it make relevant?
How
does it make it more likely than not what his intent was on the day he went out and shot his gun, as opposed to what he was thinking on the day he wrote this?
Because Mr. Kreiser's argument is that it was the circumstances of that particular encounter, and it makes it relevant that he intended on anyone coming onto his property potentially, that he was warning or having a sign, you know, that reflected that his intent was to deal with an armed response to anybody coming on the property.
This building, that might make sense to me, but where it's inside his office, where people presumably aren't coming, how does it operate in that fashion when it's posted there?
Well, again, it's not what Mr. Adams, while Mr. Adams' perception is relevant in terms of the evidence and the sufficiency of the evidence, it's what's also relevant is what was in Mr. Kreiser's mind and what his intent was. So
if he'd had a diary there on the desk and he'd written someday that he was really angry and was going to drive trespassers off with his gun, would that have been admissible?
Well, I think the diary would reflect that it was for personal use and for personal just looking at, as opposed to a sign that's on a wall that's for anyone who can see it to understand and know
this is what's going to happen if
you come on.
It's not on the outside. When you post a no trespassing sign and want to scare people away, you don't usually put it in your office on the inside and put post-its over parts of it.
Well, it looked like it was a mock-up, so perhaps it was this, you know, and again, at the end of the day, even if the trial court in looking at the motion to mistrial determined that maybe in hindsight it wouldn't have let that in if it had not known that the sign was in the office, that evidence was not material. It was not going to affect the jury's verdict with respect to the remaining evidence as overwhelming. It was harmless. So
well,
I would ask...
One of the things that I wondered about here is how it was presented there. You know, the everybody talks about case is it comes to mind, and it's mentioned in the briefs. I mean,
yes.
It seemed like there was a misunderstanding here that, you know, this wouldn't be a problem because it wasn't a prior bad act. I mean, and your brief doesn't really straighten me out on what I read it, and it sounded like you thought that everybody talks about was a case where the state won. But it wasn't.
No.
I mean, character evidence can't come in, even if it's good character.
Well, I think it's separated. You know, everybody talks about focused on the ER 404B, and it focused on what the line is between character and prior misconduct, and so, you know, in my briefing, that was the distinction, was that court sense. Everybody talks about has in when it's not misconduct that we're talking about, which in this case we're not talking about misconduct. We're talking about a piece of evidence that was found at the crime scene.
Well, and everybody talks about there was no misconduct either. The idea was is that everybody talks about was a leader in his relationship with the other guy. And since he was always a leader, then he must have been a leader that night when the murder took place, and he must have been an accomplice. That's what the state was trying to prove. Part of the idea was, well, this wasn't a bad act, being leader, but the court, that's not the correct analysis.
Well, here we weren't saying that because he had a sign-up in his office that he was acting in conformity. We're saying that it goes to his mental state with respect to what his intent was in dealing with trespassers.
So we're back to that then.
Yes, but that is the distinction.
His intent was, it said armed response. Okay, there's absolutely no dispute that he came out of that shop with a shotgun and that he did have an armed response.
Correct.
So what difference does that make? I mean, why does it do anything to help that argument? It shows him as somebody who's thinking about,
protecting himself or how he doesn't want other people. He doesn't want strangers around. I understand that, and that's why ultimately.
I mean, that's exactly what trial counsel argued, was that this makes him look like somebody who's just constantly thinking about how to be violent toward trespassers.
And that's not how it was used, certainly at trial, and certainly the fact that, as you stated, there was no contesting the fact that he concedes that he responded.
Why bring it in? Why have a sheriff get up and say, this is really relevant? Look at this. It says, armed response. This is a dangerous place.
I think the prosecutor
certainly makes Mr. Kaiser look like a dangerous person. Isn't that character evidence?
No. I think that the prosecutor's intent was
What kind of evidence is it? If it doesn't make him look dangerous, it doesn't make him, it doesn't exactly make him look private.
It goes to his intent in dealing with anybody coming on his property without an appointment. And so it is a fine line, and certainly I understand that, Your Honors, but that's not how it was used. It was not used as improper character evidence. It was used to demonstrate, because the state had the burden of demonstrating what Mr. Kaiser's intent was in using and discharging that weapon. Mr. Adams was scared that he was going to die. Thought he was dead. Thank you, and I ask the court to affirm Mr. Kaiser's conviction. Thank you.
On the issue of the sign, we believe that it was absolutely character evidence, and it went to him being an unreasonable person, behaving unreasonably, and that he was a dangerous person who would be a hothead and would blow up and would do this without any sort of justification. It goes to Mr. Kaiser's credibility as well, because the state argued that they shouldn't believe that he believed he was in any danger or that there was any fear of any injury to himself or to his wife in self-defense. And the state, the prosecutor referred specifically to that exhibit in closing argument.
The state says it's harmless. Why isn't it?
I believe it's not harmless because the very essence of lawful use of force is whether or not a person behaves reasonably in response. And that is the crux of how the state argued and the defense argued this case, as to whether this was reasonable. So it goes to Mr. Kaiser's credibility as to whether he reasonably believed himself to be in fear of injury or his wife in fear of his wife being injured. And it goes to whether his behavior was reasonable or whether this was simply his response. So if anyone ever came onto his property, that he would respond with a gun.
But what was on in that vein of why isn't this harmless? I mean, it seems like Mr. Kaiser rests his claim of fear on the guy who showed up having a half-inch tray, and he was reaching into it, and he thought that there was a gun in there?
He thought the possibility of a gun, but his fear also was there was a man who came on the property who didn't drive up where most people drove up to the obvious place in front of the door of the officers or the residents. He came walking onto the property after parking his car out by the gate. He was not dressed in any way that looked like someone professional. He looked like a biker to Mr. Kaiser. He had long hair. He was disheveled. He was carrying something, and then he went poking around the building, not as a process server, but like trying doors, looking into windows, looking behind buildings, instead of coming up to the front of the building where the door was. He also then never identified himself, and Mr. Adams admitted he never identified himself, and that he too might have been alarmed had he been someone 69, 70 years old, seeing, you know, him, the way he approached this property. He did not use the best practices of a professional practices of a process server. When he said, "Who are you?"
It's somewhat alarming, but to go get a shotgun and start firing in his general direction.
He first said, "Leave my property. You have until 5 to leave this property." And he didn't leave. He didn't move from his wife's side. And then he went and got the shotgun and came back and said, "You have to the count of 5. And he continued counting before he shot. And still the man did not move until after he shot into the air. And then he gradually began to move. But he did not move in that time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, our last.